Christmas, 1938.
No, Leslie, not by air.
It's what he wants to do.
Yes, I know. But in the middle of winter, it's a silly risk to run. Let him take the golden arrow like everyone else.
It'll certainly be more comfortable.
Comfort's the last thing the poor darling's concerned about.
Not so much of the poor darling, Venetia. 5 days over Christmas in Paris on his own. He'll have a whale of a time.
Thank you, Charlie. 5 days in Paris, all on your own.
Well, you wouldn't expect them to let you go, would you?
No. But I don't see why not.
Because you're 18, Patsy, dear, and I'm 23.
Actually, I don't mind all that much, really. I'd miss not spending Christmas at the Terry Masons. We always have such fun.
I suppose I do, too, in a way. But not enough to turn down a chance like this.
Where are you going to stay?
I asked Simon to find me somewhere, and he's got me a room near the Gare Montparnasse.
In the Latin Quarter? Gosh, I hope it's not too bohemian.
I don't mind. I shan't care how scruffy it is, so long as it's got the right atmosphere.
What does that mean? Used hairpins on the dressing table, a discarded lipstick and an old comb in the bedside cabinet.
Oh, don't talk such rot.
You'll be seeing Simon, then?
Of course. I'll probably be spending most of the time with him. After all, he knows his way around.
I wish I liked Simon.
He's my oldest friend, and I do like him.
Hmm. Yes, I know.
He's had a jolly tough life, and our family's meant a lot to him. Having a mother who deserted you as a baby and a father who died of drink doesn't exactly give you the best start in life.
Oh, well. I haven't seen him for ages. He may have improved.
He's going to have a brilliant career. I gather he's doing great things for his paper.
A job Daddy got him.
I shouldn't be surprised if he didn't end up as an MP.
Labour, of course.
Of course.
There we are, then. You've got everything?
Yes.
Enough money?
More than enough.
You don't want to have to stint yourself.
I shan't. Don't worry.
At least you're starting off in comfort.
Yes.
Pullman. It's the only way to travel. On the continent, at any rate. Ah. Well, goodbye, old boy.
Thanks, Dad.
And have a good time. And don't get into any more mischief than you can help.
I won't. Goodbye.
This is it. Paris. On a rainy winter's evening. Gosh, there's nowhere like it. And there. Look there. That girl. The rain glistening on her umbrella and the wind catching her skirt. It's Renoir. Pure Renoir. The little seamstress hurrying to meet her lover. Yes, that's Paris.
By God, what a time I'm going to have.
I wonder why Simon wasn't at the station to meet me. That was the arrangement. Perhaps a story came up and he couldn't get away. I expect there'll be a message at the hotel.
Oh, is this it? Nous sommes là?
Oui, monsieur.
Right then. Thanks.
Monsieur Fenimore told us when you would be arriving, et voilà, monsieur, you are here.
He didn't leave any message, though.
No, just that you would be staying until Thursday. Et voici votre chambre. I hope it will be to your satisfaction.
Oh.
There are two beds, as you see, but we will only charge you for one.
Ah, bon.
And the salle de bain is through here.
Oh, there's a bathroom, is there?
Only in our best rooms, monsieur.
Right. Thank you. Merci bien.
Oh, thank you, monsieur. Nous sommes toujours à votre service.
Simon?
Charlie? Hello? Where are you?
At the hotel.
Oh, good.
you doing anything tonight?
Well, no.
Why don't we dine together, then? I'll stroll round and fetch you.
So the room's all right?
Yes. Mind you, the hotel's a bit grander than I expected.
There's a bathroom.
And the great thing is it's convenient. You can bring in anyone you like. Ah, oh, here's the food.
Thank you.
Well, Charlie, how do you like being a businessman?
Much better than I expected, actually.
I think you've shown a lot of sense. You have a good time. Go to your office every day and enjoy yourself. Can't last very long now, and you may as well get all the fun out of it that you can.
What do you mean, can't last long?
Never mind. Talk about it some other time.
You haven't changed, Simon.
Tell me, what have you come to Paris for?
Well, chiefly to see you.
That's rubbish. What else?
I want to see some pictures, and if there's anything good in the theatre, I'd like to go. And I want to have a bit of a lark, generally.
By that, I suppose you mean you want to have a woman.
I don't get much opportunity in London, you know.
Mm. Later on, I'll take you to the Sarai.
What's that?
You'll see. And it's quite fun, actually.
Right.
Do you want to know what I've been doing these last 2 years?
Working for the paper.
Yes, but that's only a means to an end. I've been, how shall I put it, I've been putting my ideas in order. Educating myself. Clearing out the ragbag of mush I acquired at that stupid school of ours. And in that suburban cemetery they call the University of Cambridge. I've also been training myself to do without things. Not difficult when you don't have much to start with.
What sort of things?
Food, for one thing. No one needs more than one meal a day.
You're not telling me this is the first time today that you've eaten?
I had a cup of coffee when I got up and a glass of milk at one. It's nothing. Once I only had milk and bread for a whole month.
But why? You get paid enough, surely.
I get a living wage. Certainly enough for 3 meals a day. But who can achieve mastery over others unless he first achieves mastery over himself?
That sounds like something out of a dictionary of quotations.
It may well be, but it also sounds like a powerful truth. And men are moved by rhetoric much more than by reasoning. Already, I can do pretty well all I like with words. Before I'm through, I'll be able to do anything I want.
What actually do you want to do, Simon?
Well, certainly I don't want to be a correspondent for a London paper all my life. Whatever I do, it's the training that I'm concerned with at the moment, for the character as well as the body.
I see. And what form does your character training take?
I'll tell you. Did you wonder why I didn't come to the station to meet you?
It would have been nice if you had, but I suppose you couldn't get away.
I could have, quite easily. It's Christmas Eve and the paper doesn't come out tomorrow. But I knew you'd be disappointed, as anxious to see me as I was to see you. I forced myself not to go, and to be offhand with you on the phone.
I don't understand.
You're the only person I ever cared for in the world, Charlie. And being away from you for the past 2 years, I've probably idealised you even more. Absence does make the heart grow fonder. As I see it, if we spend some time together now, I might well be able to kill off those feelings of affection I have for you.
I'm afraid you'll think me very stupid, but I can't for the life of me see why.
I do think you're very stupid.
Well, taking that for granted, what is the reason?
You're also the only person who ever cared for me.
That's not true. My mother and father have always been fond of you.
Oh, that's nonsense, and you know it. Your father got a warm, comfortable feeling of benevolence out of being kind to a penniless orphan he could patronise and impress. While your mother was just affronted by the way I saw through your father for the humbug he was.
You're not being very flattering to my parents, are you?
Don't you see, Charlie? You gave me what I never had. What sort of childhood was it with a whore for a mother and a drunk for a father? But, well, with you, I could be a boy like others. I could bully you and rag you, mock you and neglect you, but I could also worship you. You were so unassuming, so easily pleased, so good-natured, so good. Just being with you rested me, released me from those wild forces within me. But I don't want rest and I don't want release. You're my enemy and I hate you.
You do talk an awful lot of nonsense, Simon.
You are on top of everything else. There's that damn charm of yours.
Now, look.
You know, I think it's all due to that little crease under your eyes when you smile.
What you haven't told me is what it's supposed to lead to, all this effort, all this training.
Oh, who knows? Come on. Let's not have our coffee here. Let's go to the dorm.
I'll call the waiter.
No. I'm standing you your dinner.
But
it'll be the first meal we've ever had together that I paid for. Oh, look. I've got a couple of tickets for the midnight mass at Saint Eustache. Supposed to be the best church music in Paris. You'd like to go?
Oh, yes.
Here you are, then.
Well, aren't you coming?
I don't know. So I feel nearer the time. You take them now.
Aren't you cold, Simon? Without a coat?
I taught myself not to mind cold.
What happens if you catch one?
I ignore it.
I suppose all this, well, it wouldn't have anything to do with the revolution when it comes. I mean, I presume you're still a communist.
Mm. I may have moved on a bit since Cambridge days.
Well, I still agree with my father. I don't think you're going to get very far with communism in England. The English working man's too shrewd to let himself be led by a lot of irresponsible agitators.
I shouldn't set too much store by the English working man's shrewdness. Besides, there are other ways of getting him to follow you.
And your re-education is all toward that end?
You could sum it up like that, I suppose.
Do you think it's worth it?
Tell me, Charlie, what have you done during the past year?
The past year? I don't know. Nothing very much. I've been to the office every day. I've spent a certain amount of time going round the properties on the estate.
And in your spare time?
Let's see. I've had quite a few rounds of golf, with Father mostly. I've kept up my piano playing. I've been to quite a few concerts. I've seen most of the exhibitions, all the new pictures at any rate. And I've been to the opera, and quite a lot to the theatre.
And what do you expect to do next year?
More or less the same, I suppose.
And the year after that? And the year after that?
Well, I suppose in a few years I'll get married. In due course, my father will retire, and I'll take over as estate secretary, and eventually I'll inherit his share in it.
And then you'll lead exactly the same sort of life your father led before you.
Unless the Labour Party confiscate the Mason estate, yes. You see, Simon, I'm quite content to do the job I have and at the same time have as much fun as I can on the income it gives me.
Well, I'd sooner be smashed into a mangled pulp by a bus when we cross the street than look forward to a life like yours.
Oh, well, there you are, you see. I have a happy nature and you haven't.
Well, we'll have to see if we can change that. Let's not bother about coffee. I'll take you to the Serai. The band apart, you can see why it's called the Serai.
The Turkish influence is a bit obvious, isn't it?
It's supposed to have powerful erotic connotations. I can't think why.
Oh, I can. Those transparent pantaloon things. Plus the fact that they've nothing else on from the waist up.
Well, a bit unsubtle to my mind. Still, the girls all know their stuff, and that's the important thing.
They're good dancers.
That's not quite what I meant. Ah, here's Mademoiselle Ernestine.
Good evening, Monsieur Simon.
My friend has just arrived from London. He wishes to see life.
Ah, then you have brought him to the right place.
Good evening.
He is good looking. The ladies will be pleased to see him.
Where's Madame?
She has gone home to Alsace. She likes to spend the holidays with her family. Et ainsi, I am in charge. Eh bien, monsieur, do you see anyone who takes your fancy?
Well,
the night is young. Let's have some champagne while he looks around.
Certainly, Monsieur Simon. Du champagne ici, Pierre.
Tout de suite, Mademoiselle Ernestine.
Perhaps you'll join us.
Thank you. It's a pity your friend has come on such a quiet night. On Christmas Eve, you know, a lot of people stay at home. But it will be more lively soon. There are many English who have come over. In fact, I saw in the paper that the Golden Arrow is being run in three sections. They are a great nation, the English. Some of the best girls we have had here have been English.
Really?
Mais enfin, all our girls are of the highest quality. Madame is very particular. They are of very good families. Not aristocracy, you understand. In France, the aristocracy is corrupt. No, Madame sets great value on good bourgeois stock.
You've got one aristocrat, though.
Ah, Princess Olga, oui, vraiment.
How about introducing our young friend here to her?
Ah, it's an idea. It could be an experience he has not known before.
Let's have her over.
Voici le champagne, Mademoiselle Ernestine.
Merci. Et faites venir ici la Princesse Olga.
Oui, mademoiselle.
She, of course, is Russian. You understand, monsieur, that since the revolution we have been swamped with Russians. And I must tell you that even though for a time their Slav temperament has been something of a novelty, something amusing, now, for the most part, we are sick to death of them. But Princess Olga is different. She has something... des principes, je ne sais quoi. Ah, Olga! You know, Monsieur Simon.
I saw you come in.
You'll have some champagne.
I don't mind.
I have things to attend to. You will excuse me?
Sure.
Bonsoir.
Bonsoir.
This is a friend of mine who wants to meet you.
I'm flattered. He's handsome. And he looks good-natured.
You speak jolly good English.
The princess was educated in England.
I went there when I was 2 and stayed till I was 14.
Where did you live?
In London. In Ladbroke Grove, Charlotte Street, wherever it was cheap.
Why don't you ask the princess to dance with you?
Yes, will you?
I don't mind.
Splendid, and I shall be on my way.
Oh, aren't you going to the mass?
No, I'll see you tomorrow.
But...
bye.
Don't look so worried. Come on.
Yeah.
Have you known him long?
Simon, he's my oldest friend.
Do you like him?
Of course.
He's very different from you. The last person I would have thought to be your friend.
I don't see how you can possibly say that. You don't know me.
What was that you said to him about the mass?
He's given me a couple of tickets for midnight mass at Saint Eustache. I thought he and I were going together.
Will you take me?
What?
You've got 2 tickets. I would give anything in the world to go.
Well, can you get away?
I can arrange it with Mademoiselle Ernestine. Give me 100 francs and I'll fix it.
I'm sorry, I just find it a bit difficult to get used to the change in your appearance.
You wouldn't expect me to go to church in that ridiculous costume, would you?
No, I suppose not. Tell me, princess, do you like music?
I'm not a princess, and my name isn't Olga. They call me that at the Sarai because it flatters the clients if they think they're going to bed with a princess. And they chose Olga because it's the only Russian name they know besides Sasha.
Oh.
My father was a professor of economics at the University of Leningrad. And my mother was the daughter of a customs official.
I see. What is your name, then?
Lydia. Ah! We are there!
It's not surprising. The church and all that. As against the sort of life she leads. I say. Gosh. Poor kid. I wonder if I ought to do anything. Would you like to go out?
No.
Oh, Lord, this is awful. People are beginning to look at us.
I look awful, I know. I'm sorry. Whenever I cry, my eyelids swell up and then take ages to go down.
You look fine.
No, I don't. And you don't want to sit there having to look at me. Why don't you go back to the Sarai?
If it's not too much of a bore, I'd like to stay here with you.
Why? Are you sorry for me? Or are you just curious?
Why should I feel sorry for you? All curious come to that.
What exactly did your friend Simon tell you about me?
Nothing. All I know is you're Russian, and you've told me you're not a princess.
Yes, I'm Russian. And all I know of Russia is what I've read. I'm Russian, and I speak my native language worse than I speak English or French. Among my own people, I'm just as much a foreigner as anywhere else.
No, I see what you mean.
You do? I doubt it. How can someone like you, with a home and a country, living among people whose ways are your ways, how can you tell what it's like to belong nowhere?
You've no family, no relations?
Not one. When we escaped, my father, my mother and me, I was 2. We lived in England for 12 years. But my father, who was a socialist, was always homesick and yearning to go back. Eventually, he told them he would be happy to do anything the Bolsheviks asked of him. And they invited him to go home.
Just him?
Yes, we were to follow. But the moment he got there, he was arrested by the Cheka. And the next thing we heard was that he had committed suicide by jumping out of the window of his cell on the 4th floor.
I'm sorry.
My mother thought we'd do better in Paris, where she had friends, so we came here. I was apprenticed to a dressmaker, and my mother starved herself so that I had enough to eat, with the result that she died.
Then you were...
If those friends of hers, Alexei and Yevgenia, hadn't gone on sheltering me, I'd have died too.
Ah, so you still got them?
Yes, I've still got them. But they are desperately poor. Everyone now, you see, is sick of the Russians. Russian restaurants, Russian orchestras. Only a Russian whore is a bit of a novelty. And that means that they can at least be sure of getting my rent pretty regularly.
You mean you live with them?
I'm only at the Sarai at night. I must live somewhere.
Yes, yes, of course.
So now you know why I was crying. And it wasn't for any other reason you might think.
I'm sorry, what other reason
would... You really don't know who I am?
No.
I am the wife of Robert Berger. The clients at the Sarai get quite a kick out of that, too.
I'm afraid you think me very stupid, but I honestly don't know what you're talking about. Who is Robert Berger?
Oh, such is fame. Robert Berger murdered the English bookmaker Teddy Jordan. The trial lasted 3 days and was on the front page of every newspaper in France.
Oh, yes, I do remember something. The victim was English, so...
Robert was sentenced to 15 years penal servitude. He's at Saint-Laurent in French Guiana.
And you're his wife?
I'm his wife.
It must have been an awful time for you.
We'd only been married for 6 months. I was going to have a baby. Perhaps that was what saved his neck. That and his youth. He was only 22. The baby was born dead. I'd suffered too much. But I loved him. He was my first and my last love. My only love. That is why I wouldn't divorce him as they all wanted.
What happened exactly?
He came home one night quite late. I had gone to bed and was asleep already. We lived with his mother. At least it was her house, but she had a little pavilion at the bottom of the garden. She took all her meals with us, though, and was still in the house when Robert came in a state of great excitement. I don't know what passed between them, but... It was enough to arouse in her the fear that something terrible had happened.
Go on.
He woke me with a kiss on the lips. And that night he was like a man possessed of a god. I never thought it was possible for a man to love a woman as he loved me that night. I never knew a woman was capable of such adoration as I was filled with. And this man was my husband. Mine. In the morning, when I awoke, he was still sleeping, so he didn't see me take downstairs with me the new grey suit he'd been wearing. I must tell you, Robert was very particular about his clothes, and it was one of the tasks I'd taken upon myself since we'd been married to brush and press them each day ready for wear. His mother was already in the kitchen when I put the iron on to heat up. What on earth? What is this Robert's got on his trousers?
What?
These stains, look!
Let me have them.
Oh, he'll be furious, his new suit.
Maman, have the papers come yet?
Yes, there is nothing.
I'll get your coffee.
Thank you, my sweet.
Did you know you'd got your trousers into an awful mess yesterday?
What?
I'm afraid it'll have to be your blue suit today.
What are you talking about?
Your mother has them, look.
Give them to me.
It's all right. I know what to do with them.
I think we've got some petrol. We'll try that to get the stains out, or I can take them straight to the cleaners.
No.
But that stain, it must...
It won't be necessary. I can deal... God, help us, what is this?
Leave that alone, Maman. You've no right to go through the pocket.
Where did you get this money?
Now look, Maman.
I insist that you tell me.
I had a lucky bet yesterday.
Robert! You promised your mother that you wouldn't...
This was a certainty, and as you see, it came up. Give it to Lydia, maman. Let her keep it. If I have it, it will slip through my fingers.
No, she mustn't have it.
But, madame...
Go and attend to your room. I won't have the rooms left unmade all day long.
Actually, I was glad to leave them. It was quite a lot of money. A roll of 1,000-franc notes. And what flashed through my mind was that it was her money.
Hers?
Robert had often said that she'd a hoard of cash hidden away somewhere, and I was afraid he'd found it and taken it.
But was he likely to do that sort of thing?
Oh, I was ashamed of myself for thinking it. But you see, at that time, Robert had no job. When we'd got married, he'd been working for a broker. But soon after, they'd quarreled, and Robert had left.
So how did you live?
He made a bit selling cars and other things on commission. And he was crazy about racing. And sometimes, yes, he was quite successful with the horses. But really, what we all depended on was his mother's pension as the widow of an army doctor.
I see.
Anyway, for the rest of that day, Robert stayed at home and mooched around doing nothing, hardly exchanging a word with his mother or with me. I'd no idea what could have upset him. But when we went to bed, I put my arms around him to console him, and...
Oh, for God's sake, leave me alone.
Robert!
I'm not in the mood for lovemaking tonight.
Oh.
I'm sorry I've been in such a bad humor. I drank too much at Jojo's bar yesterday.
Robert!
I'll be all right tomorrow, my sweet. You'll see.
Robert, was it your mother's money?
Yes.
How could you?
If anyone asks you, though, you never saw it.
If anyone
You
asks,
know nothing about it.
If you say so.
And as for the trousers, if anyone asks you about them, you're to say I got them so dirty cleaning a car that they were useless. So my mother gave them away to a tramp. Will you remember that?
Yes.
It may be that my head depends on it.
The next morning, Robert went out wearing that same light gray suit, but with a second pair of trousers he had made when he ordered it. He'd already gone when I got a look at the morning paper. There I read that an English bookmaker called Teddy Jordan had been found dead in his flat, and that he had been stabbed in the back. I'd often heard Robert speak of him. Now I knew it was Robert who'd killed him.
You knew?
I knew.
Well, good Lord, do you know what time it is? After 2.
Is it...
You won't go back to the Sarai now, will you?
No. I'll wait for the first metro and go home.
But that's not till, what, 5 o'clock?
4:30, I think. It's all right.
Look, there are 2 beds in my room.
You mean...
Just to sleep.
Ah.
I reckon you must be pretty tired. Well, the midnight mass and you being upset and all that.
Well, I...
What I mean is... What with the journey and the excitement, I'm pretty well all in too, and...
Yes. Okay.
Good. It'll be all right. You'll see.
I've been watching you sleep.
What time is it?
Nearly 12.
What?
You were sleeping so profoundly, I didn't want to wake you. Like a child, and such a look of innocence on your face.
My face badly needs a shave. Let me do that, and then I'll take you somewhere for lunch.
Couldn't we lunch here?
In the hotel, downstairs. I don't know what it's like.
No, up here, in the room. It's so wonderful to shut out the world for a few hours. Silence... Peace. Solitude.
I suppose I could order lunch for you up here while I go out.
I'd rather you stayed. There's something about you I find comforting. And while you order, I shall have a bath.
By golly. She's pretty cool, isn't she? And it's not as if I find her attractive. Quite plain, in fact. And her manner doesn't help. Mind you, I suppose I've asked for it. And it would be pretty bad form to give her the brush off now. What a way to spend Christmas Day.
A bit different from the others. Midday. Gosh. At the Terry Masons, they'll just about be at the sherry and present stage, getting ready to sit down to turkey and crackers and Christmas pudding. Do I wish I was there? Maybe not.
If we are going to stay in, you won't mind if I go and wear your dressing gown?
No. By all means. It suits you.
Thank you.
Actually, it does suit her. And in a way, without all that makeup, not to mention the swollen eyelids, she isn't all that bad. In fact, she's almost pretty. Not in an exciting way, of course. I mean, I couldn't really... But it's an interesting situation, all right. Even though it's not what I expected. Not in a million years. Hello?
Charlie, want to come round?
I'm afraid I can't just now.
Why not?
Lydia's here.
Who the devil's Lydia?
Princess Olga.
Oh, yes. Well done, old boy, I knew you'd click. When you've a moment to spare for an old friend, you let me know, will you?
While you were in the bath, Simon rang.
Oh, yes. He was at the trial, you know.
The trial of your...
Robert's trial, yes. He wrote some articles about it. They were very clever. Lots of them even appeared in the French papers. It did him quite a lot of good. Simon, I mean.
Tell me, how did you come to meet Robert Berger in the first place?
Chance. It was the purest chance. I met him at a concert.
You are crying, mademoiselle.
Yes. But it's not because I'm unhappy.
I know. This Russian music, it's thrilling and it tears one's heart to pieces.
But you're French. What can it mean to you?
When I listen to it, I feel there's nothing that man is capable of that I can't do.
Really? To me, it's about the futility of striving against fate. About the joy and peace of resignation.
There you are. That's the difference. You're Russian yourself, aren't you?
Yes.
It's a Russian concert next week, too. Are you coming again?
I don't think so.
Why not?
I'm not one of the Russian millionaires. Not that there are many of them left.
I sometimes get a free pass for two. Meet me here next Sunday and I'll take you in.
Oh, I don't know if I can do that.
Oh, why? Because you don't know me?
Partly. I wouldn't want to be under an obligation to a total stranger. But I thank you for your offer.
I shall look out for you anyway.
We'll see. I did go the following Sunday, but it was a last-minute impulse, and I was even a little surprised to find that he was there waiting for me. This time, when the concert was over, he suggested we had some tea in a smart salon de thé near the Champs-Élysées, and... I agreed. Mm-hmm. I found him attractive. Not only his looks, but his enthusiasms and the warmth he radiated. And he was a good listener, too, full of sympathy and understanding when I told him about my life. And so we started to go out together. To the cinema, to concerts on Sundays, to a cafe or a tea room. But there were no intimacies between us. Nothing beyond his taking my arm as we walked, or perhaps holding my hand during a performance. He was the only friend of my own age I'd ever had, and he was such delightful company. I had to force myself not to believe that he was in love with me, and I had to keep an iron control over my own feelings. Then one Sunday, there wasn't a concert, and he invited me to the little house in Neuilly to meet his mother. We went by car. He'd borrowed it from a friend, he told me, but he left it parked in the next street so as not to arouse comment among the neighbors. Mm. I don't quite know what I'd expected. Someone homely, comfortably bourgeois, still in widow's black. Certainly not the smart, handsome woman in flowered silk who greeted me.
My son has talked of you so much, so I'm sure you can understand how I've been looking forward to meeting you.
Madame.
And what a pleasure it is to see that you are every bit as nice as he told me.
There, maman. You should trust my judgment more.
Ah, let's have tea right away, shall we? Now, you Russians take it with lemon, don't you? See, I've prepared it all specially.
And so it went on. So concerned for my every wish, pressing delicate little sandwiches and cakes on me, at the same time sizing me up and eliciting as much information about me as she could.
Mm.
I was quite sure she detested me, and I fully expected that Robert, in deference to his mother, would now find ways of ending our association. So when we met a few days later, and he suggested that instead of going to the pictures, we take a drive to the Bois, I already feared the worst. This isn't the same car you had on Sunday.
No, this one belongs to a friend who wants to sell it. I've got to show it to a possible customer. My dear, I've something to say to you.
Yes?
I hardly know how to put it. I am not often nervous, but on
if
this occasion...
If one has something awkward to say, it's best to come straight out with it.
All right, then. Will you marry me?
Me?
I love you so much. I think I fell in love with you at first sight, at the concert, with the tears pouring down your cheeks.
But your mother...
Ah, she'd be delighted.
When you took me to see her on Sunday... Did she know you wanted to marry me?
Of course. And it was only right that she should meet you first.
I thought she hated me.
Oh, no, my darling. You are quite wrong.
Oh, Robert.
Then you do care for me a little.
I've worshipped you from the moment I first saw you. I was so blissfully happy. It would have been enough to die at that moment.
Oh.
The wedding took place on a Friday, and as Robert had to be back at work on Monday morning, we had just 2 days for the honeymoon in Dieppe. What I didn't know was that the car we went in, like all the others that Robert had borrowed from time to time, was in fact stolen, and that he was on a suspended sentence for that very crime. Neither did I know that he'd only just avoided conviction on a drug smuggling charge and that Madame Berger had welcomed him marrying me as his last chance of settling down and leading an honest life.
But he didn't.
No.
Even so, it's quite a step. I mean, from those sort of crimes to murder.
I know. But for Robert, it had to be the next step.
How?
Robert used to go to a cafe bar run by a man called Jojo. Jordan was also a regular there. And the police were keen to interview anyone who knew him. At that stage, they had no reason to suspect Robert.
But you said you already knew he'd killed Jordan.
Yes.
Why was that?
It was as I read the full reports of the murder, little things that had happened since we'd been married, even before we were married, all suddenly made a pattern.
What sort of things?
Oh, he'd bring me expensive presents. My watch, for example. It must have cost much more than he could afford. And there was a vanity case, in which I found a bus ticket. He said he'd bought it of a girl who'd had a bad day at the races.
It could have been true.
There was also the money.
What money?
The roll of 1,000-franc notes that Madame Berger had found in Robert's blood-stained trousers.
Didn't he say he'd stolen it from her?
Yes, but the report said that when Jordan was found, his empty wallet was lying nearby. Now I was convinced... That was where the money had come from. And what's more, that Madame Berger also knew it and had hidden it.
That was jumping to conclusions a bit, wasn't it?
As it happens, I was right. But what I now had to do was find where she had hidden it and get rid of it. Then there could be no connection with Robert. The reports all made much of the fact that there were no fingerprints in Jordan's flat.
And did you find it?
Yes. Sewn into the hem of the heavy brocade curtains in her sitting room. 7,000 francs. I restitched the hem, tore up the notes, and flushed them down the toilet. And then I breathed a little more freely. The trousers had been destroyed, Robert's grey suit was complete, no one would know of the second pair, and the money was gone. If the police came, they would find nothing.
I've bought the evening papers. They're full of the murder.
Oh, let me see.
Is dinner ready? I'm ravenous.
It won't be long.
I've been at Jojo's bar. They say Jordan had done quite well that day and was standing everybody drinks.
Had they any idea who might have done it?
Oh, they suspect it was a sailor. The concierge apparently saw Jordan come in with one about a week ago. Jordan was that way inclined, it seems.
Lydia, finish setting the table.
Very well.
The blow which killed Jordan was struck with great force. So they're looking for a big man, someone of powerful physique. Not like me, eh?
What can that be?
I'll go and see. Well, pull yourselves together, both of you. There's nothing to worry about.
It was the police. Two detectives who took Robert away with them. Ah. Not arrested, or no. Just to answer one or two questions that might throw some light on the murder. Later on, they came back with a search warrant. They gave the house a thorough going over, and among the items they were interested in was the vanity case I told you about. Mm-hmm. When they got to the brocade curtains, my mother-in-law started trembling violently, and I thought she was going to faint. I grasped her hand and held it tightly. At last, when they were ready to leave, one of them picked up the vanity case.
I am going to take this away, madame. And also, if you please, your watch.
Why?
Will you let me have it?
What right have you to take that?
I have reason to believe they are stolen goods. And this warrant authorizes me to do so.
Here you are.
Thank you, madame. If our suspicions prove unfounded, these objects will, of course, be restored to you. Thank you, ladies, for your cooperation. I bid you good evening.
Oh, my God. The brutes. What have they done to us?
It's all right. They didn't find the notes, did they?
The notes?
I found them and I destroyed them.
You?
Yes. Now they can't touch him.
Robert didn't do it, I swear it. It was never him who murdered the Englishman.
Why do you say that? You know as well as I do that it was.
You're not going to betray him.
I? Why do you think I destroyed that money? And how could you have expected a trained policeman not to find it where you hid it?
Oh, my poor child. What an happiness I've brought on you.
Oh, then, maman, no. Calm yourself.
It seemed his only chance, marrying you. But it was criminal of me. I should never have allowed it.
I loved him.
But how can your love survive this? Can you ever forgive him? Will you ever forgive me?
Of course I forgave her. But it was the closest to each other we ever came, that snobbish, affected, scheming woman and I. Anyway, the next day Robert was formally charged with the murder of Teddy Jordan. And when a few weeks later I found that I was pregnant, I realized that it was on that very night, the night he'd come home to me in his blood-stained grey suit, that our child had been conceived.
Mm.
It stopped raining.
Oh.
Shall we go out? You should have some fresh air.
Oh, yes. All right.
I'll just pop into the bathroom and get dressed.
I suppose it's all true. I mean, why on earth should you make it up? And yet, she's so... so... ordinary. Ordinary. What am I saying? Ordinary people. Normal people are like us, like Mother and Dad and Patsy. Good Lord, I've completely forgotten. It's still Christmas Day, isn't it? Yes. At the Terry Masons, they'll be playing party games. Perhaps the dancing will have started. There'll be
Kissing under the mistletoe? One or two of the chaps will have got fit tight, but no one will mind. Can I ask you one thing?
Yes?
If you love him so much, how can you bear to work in a place like the Sarai? I mean, couldn't you find some other way of earning a living?
Easily.
Then why the Sarai?
I need to atone.
What?
I love Robert with all my heart and soul. But he has sinned. Only by suffering as much as him can I help to expiate that sin.
But he's suffering because he committed a crime. You didn't. You were a victim pretty well.
Oh, how little you understand. You with your cold English nature. Robert is my life.
Yes, but look here. A merciful God doesn't expect you to atone for someone else's misdeeds.
What has God to do with it?
Well,
And how can you believe in God when you see the misery there is in the world? How can I believe in God when he let the Bolsheviks kill my poor, simple father? Do you know what I believe? That God has been dead for millions of years.
What's the point of atonement? It's meaningless.
There's no logic in it, I grant you. I only ask you to understand that I can't help myself. To cleanse his soul, I must suffer.
Oh, I don't know.
Don't look so serious. Let's go back to the hotel. If you want to come to bed with me, you can, you know.
Oh, no. No, I don't think so. Thank you.
Why not? Isn't that what you came to Paris for? Isn't that what all you English come to Paris for?
I don't know, but I didn't.
Oh, well. Just as you like.
I like that. I'm hanged if she's going to mortify her flesh at my expense. And even worse, cheek, she doesn't give a damn either way. Some chaps might consider she owed them something for 24 hours worth of hospitality. She might at least give me some credit for showing a bit of delicacy. Not that she's any great shakes. I couldn't really fancy her. I prefer a good night's sleep any day. Oh, hell. What a way to spend Christmas Day.
Good morning.
By Jove, I slept well.
Me too. Oh, you don't know what it's meant to me these last two nights. I'm so refreshed.
Good.
But I mustn't be a burden to you.
Oh, you haven't been.
You've come to Paris to have a good time, and it's obvious you're not going to have it with me. So as soon as I've dressed and we've had breakfast, I shall go back to Alexis.
And tonight to the Sarai.
I suppose so.
Look, I'm not going back till Thursday. If you care to stay on here, there's no reason why you shouldn't.
You don't mean that.
Oh, yes, I do. Or I wouldn't have suggested it.
Why should you do this? For someone who's a complete stranger.
Look, the offer's there. Yes or no?
They say the English are kind to animals. Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Right then.
But it won't be much fun for you.
Probably not. But it'll be interesting.
You'd better keep your coat on. It's not very warm in here.
I'll say it isn't.
I don't feel the cold.
No? Well, you could have fooled me.
What have you done with Olga?
Her name's Lydia.
Yes, of course.
And she's gone home to get her toothbrush. She's staying with me at the hotel till I go back to London.
Well. Good for you.
Why did you get us together?
I thought it'd be rather a joke. A new experience for you to go to bed with the wife of a notorious murderer. Is she still madly in love with her husband?
She seems to be.
It's curious human nature, isn't it? He's a complete rotter, you know. And there she is, working at a place like the Sarai, just so that she can make enough money to pay for his escape and then join him in Brazil.
What?
Oh, yes. No question about that. I covered the trial for the paper, you know.
Yes, I know. She told me.
What else did she tell you?
Oh, how she came to meet Berger and to marry him, and all the events that led up to his arrest.
Mm. It's funny, you know. He wasn't arrested for the murder at all.
He wasn't?
No, not to start with. He was held for being in possession of stolen goods. A vanity case and a watch.
Oh, yes. She told me about them. A bargain he'd picked up and given her as a present.
That's what she told you, did she? Well, you picked them up all right, but not quite in the way she'd have you understand.
Oh? Mm.
Among the little rackets that Robert Berger indulged in, along with the stolen cars and touting of bookmakers and the little bits of drug dealing, was a very characteristic one. One that fitted in very well with his smart appearance and his charm.
What was that?
He'd watch out for a woman waiting at a bus stop, and cruising by one of his stolen cars, he'd offer her a lift. Then, at a suitable moment, he'd pull up on some pretext. Engine making a funny noise. Did we run over something? And he contrived it that it was the woman who was the one to get out. Once she was out, off he'd drive with her handbag and anything else she'd been carrying.
Well, I shouldn't think that sort of thing would bring him in a fortune.
No, but it was quite exciting. And it did net him several items of value, like the vanity case and the watch. It was bad luck that they were identified by one of the victims.
I don't see what they had to do with the murder of Jordan.
Well, nothing directly. The police, you see, had only taken him in as one of the shady fraternity that hung round Jojo's bar. But with the stolen goods having come to hand, they felt they could now put a bit of pressure on him. In the event, though, they didn't need to.
How was that?
Ironically enough, because of the watch.
What, the stolen one, the one he'd given to Lydia?
Yes. Hmm. It was common knowledge that Jordan had a guest the night he was killed, even though there were no fingerprints. But what hadn't got out was that some fragments of a watch glass had been found, and that those fragments exactly fitted the stolen watch Robert had given to Lydia.
Oh, come on, that's pretty flimsy.
I know, but it was enough to start them off on building up a case. It was established that Robert had been wearing it on the night of the murder. His own was being repaired, and later, when Lydia had collected it for him, she'd had a new glass put in her watch. Then they traced the gloves he'd been wearing that day, a new pair of grey suede ones, and they also found out that his grey suit had an extra pair of trousers to it.
Ah, yes, the trousers with the bloodstains.
Mm. In the witness box, his mother insisted she'd given them away to a tramp, but her self-righteousness and superior airs went down rather badly with the jury.
I can imagine.
Lydia, on the other hand, made a good impression.
Yes. Mm.
Her pathetic loyalty, the fact that she was pregnant, her general demeanour, they all got her a lot of sympathy. So instead of the death sentence, Berger got 15 years in a penal colony due to extenuating circumstances.
What extenuating circumstances?
There weren't any. Well, perhaps the case wasn't absolutely open and shut. And anyway, juries don't like condemning a man to death.
So what did actually happen?
Jordan had been quite generous to Berger in the way of commissions, the odd loan. He probably expected some sort of favours in return. Berger decided to exploit the situation, so having played him as an angler plays a fish, he finally agreed to visit Jordan in his flat. It was probably premeditated. The gloves pointed that, and once there, he waited until Jordan had his back to him, and then he struck. He'd been something of a tennis player and could muster a pretty powerful blow.
So much for the big, husky sailor.
Mm. There wasn't much of value in the flat, so he just cleared off with the contents of Jordan's wallet. Jordan had apparently had quite a good day.
It seems almost too trivial. I mean, for someone like Berger to kill a man just for a few thousand francs.
But you don't understand. A man like Berger, everything he did, all his exploits, stealing the cars, the trick with the women, all had that element of bravado, of exhilaration about them. He got a kick out of his petty crimes.
Petty crimes, yes, but murder?
Well, the petty crimes had become too tame. He needed something more exciting, spiced with greater danger.
And that's the man that Lydia loves so much she'd die for him.
Probably kill for him, too, so watch out.
Oh, don't be an ass. She shares his guilt.
What?
Nothing. I suppose he must have some good qualities.
Charm?
There's the music. That's what brought them together.
Since when has music been equated with goodness? Oh, I know you love music, Charlie, but you could be the exception. No, I'm afraid he's just what he is, part and parcel of the world of Jojo's bar and a thousand like it. The half-world that preys on the other half, shady, shabby, perverted, with its own code of morals, true, but a code that would be utterly incomprehensible to you and people like you, Charlie.
Well, I don't know about that.
Oh, yes. You see the world like some placid lake, reflecting the blue sky and the dappled clouds and the willows on its bank. But just below the surface, there are strange, murky horrors. Poisonous snakes, fish with murderous jaws, all at war with each other, yet waiting for some unsuspecting innocent to venture within their reach.
You're not saying that's where you'd feel more at home, are you?
God, no. But I acknowledge its existence.
Hello. You've got a different frock on.
Yes. It's the only nice one I've got. If I am to be seen with such a handsome young man, I can at least try to be a credit to him.
That's very charming of you.
So, where shall we go?
How would you like a trip on a bateau mouche?
Oh, that would be lovely. I can't think when I was last on one.
I thought it was only tourists who went on them.
Well, you're a tourist. Come on, let's go. You didn't go to look at any pictures, then?
No, I went to see Simon.
What is it that you see in him?
I've told you. We were at school together and at university. He's been my friend always.
He's cold, calculating, and inhuman.
No, I think you're wrong there. He's capable of great affection. I know he does his best to smother it, but I honestly do believe that he... Well... that he has a great need for love, which he feels he can never arouse.
Oh, you're very sentimental. How can anyone arouse love who isn't prepared to give it? You know, he comes a lot to the Sarai, but he doesn't often go up with a girl.
It's obvious he can do nothing right.
He's talked to me a great deal about the Russian Revolution.
At Cambridge, he was a member of the Communist Party, but I think he's dropped all that now.
Have you heard of Dzerzhinsky?
No.
Simon talks a lot about Dzerzhinsky. He was the head of the Cheka, the secret police. He lived for the Cheka and for nothing else. At the height of his career, he lived in one small room with nothing in it but his desk and his narrow iron bedstead. And that's the role your Simon means to play when the revolution he's hoping for takes place.
Oh, dear. You know, England isn't like Russia. Simon will have to wait a hell of a long time before he's chief of the English secret police.
He's prepared to wait. Didn't Lenin wait? And anyway, don't be so sure. The war that's coming, whether you win or lose, is going to result in a tremendous social upheaval.
What?
And do you think the English proletariat is going to leave your class with all its privileges?
No, I'm afraid you're quite wrong. First of all, I don't think there is a war coming. And secondly, you talk as if nothing's been done for the working classes. But let me tell you that the British working man gets higher wages for fewer hours than a great many others. He gets free schooling, free hospitals, and we're even beginning to give him holidays with pay. You'll find he's not got much to complain of.
And you'll find the views of a benefactor and the views of the beneficiary are apt to differ.
Well... considering the mess they're in, I wouldn't say your Russian friends have been all that successful with their revolution.
That's the bitterest part of our tragedy. Whatever has happened to us, we know in our hearts we deserved it. It's a lovely day.
Hmm? What day is it?
Tuesday. And it's a day to walk to the Louvre.
The Louvre.
You came to Paris to see pictures, didn't you?
Well, yes,
among
but...
among other things. Come on, then. Get up and let's go.
Ah, there she is.
Who?
La Gioconda. We always made a point of looking at her first.
Really?
Whenever I came to Paris with my parents.
Why?
Why what?
Why must you always look at that one first?
Well, hang it. It's Leonardo's most famous work. One of the most important pictures in the world.
Does that picture say anything to you?
Of course it does.
What?
It says all sorts of things. But, well, I don't see if there's any need to put it into words. Either you like it or you don't.
And you like La Gioconda?
Very much.
Why?
Well, I've known it practically all my life.
Ah, the same reason you like your friend Simon, eh?
All right. You show me the pictures you like.
All right. Come on.
Ah, yes. Chardin. I've seen that one before.
But have you ever looked at it?
Of course I have. Chardin was a pretty good painter. My mother thinks a lot of him. And I've always liked his still lifes.
Is that all it means to you? a still life. I tell you, that picture breaks my heart.
That does. A loaf of bread and a flagon of wine.
A loaf of bread and a flagon of wine.
Of course. It's very well painted.
Yes, you're right. It is well painted. It's painted with pity and love. It's not only a loaf of bread and a flagon of wine. It's the daily fare of suffering men and women. It's so humble, so natural, so friendly. It's not only a loaf of bread and a flagon of wine. It's the mystery of man's lot on earth. His craving for a little friendship and a little love. The humility of his resignation when he sees that even they must be denied him. And isn't it wonderful that with those simple objects, through his painter's exquisite sensibility, that funny, dear old man should have made something so beautiful that it breaks you? It's as if he wanted to show you that if only you have enough love, if only you have enough sympathy, out of all the pain and distress and evil of the world, you can create beauty.
Yes. Yes. I see what you mean.
Right. Shall we go now?
Aren't there any more you want to look at?
No. I feel happy and peaceful. I've no need of any others.
You know, I can never remember a time in my life when there weren't pictures around. My parents are very artistic. Some might say they're a bit highbrow, but they've always been keen on my sister and me having a real appreciation of art. And yet, it seems I don't know anything about it at all. At least not half as much as you do.
But I know nothing about art.
You do feel strongly about it, and art's a matter of feeling, I suppose, as much as anything else.
You mustn't be worried. It's natural you should look at pictures differently from me.
I don't see why, though. I mean...
You're young, healthy, happy and prosperous. It's just one pleasure among a lot of pleasures. To walk through a gallery is an agreeable way of passing an idle hour. But I've always been poor, often hungry, sometimes terribly lonely. To me, pictures have been food and drink and company.
Yes.
When my mother died, they comforted me. During the long months before Robert's trial, and I was pregnant, I think I should have gone mad or killed myself if I hadn't been able to go in there and be alone with my friends of paint and canvas. So, is it really strange that that little picture should mean so much to me?
No. No, I suppose it isn't.
Very nicely, but where does Russia come in?
Oh, come on, that's a bit much. You asked me to play this music because it belonged to your husband, and then you blame me for not being Russian enough. He wasn't Russian.
No, but he had the feeling for it. Still, I'm being unkind. It's so long since these pieces were played, and it is good of you to play them for me. So please, please, again. You played as if it was about a Sunday afternoon in London with people in their best clothes walking around and wondering if it's time for tea.
Thank you very much. You play it better.
But I can't play.
You can tell me I'm wrong, so all right. You show me. If playing false notes and keeping your foot on the loud pedal makes it Russian, then I see what you mean.
Oh, you are so sweet.
It's nice of you to say so.
You play very well and your technique is excellent. But you can't play Russian music. Here, play me some Schumann.
No, I'm not going to play anymore.
Oh, you're angry with me. Why don't you hit me?
That didn't occur to me. I'm not angry.
Be nice to me and play some Schumann. That's the music for you. Healthy and comfortable and wholesome. Come on.
All right.
don't even like me much, do you?
Not very.
Then why do you bother about me? Why don't you just tell me to go to hell?
I can't imagine.
Then I'll tell you. It's goodness. Just pure, simple, stupid goodness.
Go to hell.
I did have every intention of being a professional pianist. I worked very hard at it.
I'm sure.
Still, before that, I was just set on being a professional painter.
And you didn't become that either?
No.
How was that?
Oh, Dad very cleverly sowed and nurtured the idea that to be a success needed more talent than I had. I've got a facility for doing all sorts of things. I can paint a bit, play a bit, even write a bit. Perhaps if I'd only been able to do one of them really well.
You love them, don't you?
What?
Your parents.
Yes. Yes, of course I do.
When I lived with my parents in Ladbroke Grove, I remember going past all those fine houses in Bayswater. That's where you live, isn't it?
Yes, Porchester Terrace.
I remember wondering what sort of people lived in them. Now I know.
Quite ordinary people, really.
People at peace with themselves and the world.
Yes, I suppose so.
How lucky you English are with no fear of the future. Of your world being turned upside down.
Why should we have?
Comfortable enough. Well off enough to enjoy all the good things of life.
Well, you can't blame us for that.
Oh, no, no, I don't.
The English have worked for their comfort, you know. My great-grandfather was only market gardener, but because he was quite shrewd and developed the property he had, his descendants have got to the position we're in today.
Let's hope it doesn't change.
You mean the way it did for all these people here?
For the Russian ones, yes. Not all the customers are Russian, you know.
I wondered about that. Still, the food was. What was it we had?
Kulebiakka.
I don't think I've ever tasted anything like it.
The place is quite authentic. One of the last genuine ones that are left. It's also one of the places where the two worlds meet.
Which two worlds?
Mine and Robert's.
Ah, yes. I thought some of them looked pretty tough customers.
But don't worry, you're quite safe. Many of them will know who I am.
Madame
Berbier. What did I tell you? Что хотите?
Это письмо из Лельца.
Спасибо.
Madame.
What was all that?
This note is from the proprietor. Excuse me. Charlie, we're going to have some champagne. They're best.
All right, I'll call.
And I'm going to pay for it.
Oh, no.
No arguments. You have been good to me, with no thought of reward. But Madame Robert Berger is mindful of her debt. Besides, I have something to celebrate.
What?
That doesn't matter. All that matters is that you celebrate with me.
So, what were we celebrating? Why wouldn't she tell me? It was to do with the note, obviously. If they were Robert Berger's cronies, could it have something to do with his escape? I mean, Simon said that's why she's working at the Sarai, to make enough money to pay for it. And if it's true, then all that about atonement's a lot of rot. And she's probably having a jolly good laugh at the way I swallowed it. Oh, hell no. I admit I can't fathom her at all, but I know she's not that callous. She couldn't be. In fact, today's been quite fun. And she isn't really all that unattractive. Especially when you think how she was dressed when I first met her, all that makeup and those Turkish trousers. Gosh. I wonder. After all, she did offer, and hang it, she does owe me something. Oh, now, come on. That's behaving like an absolute swine. Still, I wonder if she's really asleep. Lydia? Lydia, are you... Oh, my gosh. She's crying in her sleep. Crying her heart out. What ghastly, agonizing dreams can she be having? She's like a child, the tears just pouring down her cheeks. Oh, Lord. Poor kid.
This morning I have to meet someone.
Oh?
So you will be spared my company for some of your last day in Paris.
Who have you got to meet?
Oh, some people.
Is it to do with the note you got in the restaurant? Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's none of my business.
You are very polite and sweet. Yes, it is to do with the note.
I see.
What will you do?
I ought to go and see Simon, at least to say goodbye.
Yes, all right. But don't believe all he tells you about me.
I won't. I also want to do some shopping. I must take something back for the family.
Of course. I shall see you back here, and we shall spend our last afternoon and evening together like an old married couple.
The love affair's still going strong, is it?
Lydia's still with me.
Don't let her sting you too much. There's no reason why you should help get a rotten husband out of jug.
I thought you had a certain amount of sympathy for him.
I found him interesting. I admired his cold-blooded, unscrupulous nerve in a revolution, a useful instrument.
Not a very reliable one, though.
With the right guidance and control.
By people like you.
That's right.
And how are you going to get there? What's your road to power?
Well, in an old-fashioned country like England, it'd have to be through Parliament.
Through the democratic process?
Yes. Democracy is moonshine, of course. Liberty the people aren't to be trusted with. There's nothing equal about them, and fraternity is sentimental tosh. But once one's there and the conditions are ripe, democracy goes out of the window anyway.
And the conditions are?
War. And the ensuing economic chaos.
But there isn't going to be a war. Mr. Chamberlain fixed that at Munich last September.
He came back with his little piece of paper. Don't worry, Charlie. War is coming, all right. And with it, upheaval for the rich and powerful, starvation for the poor, and power to the ones with the skill and foresight to take it.
It's still to be proved that communism is practicable.
Well, who's talking about communism? It got nowhere in Hungary and Germany. It's on the verge of defeat in Spain, and Russia's made a mess of it. It's the other lot who have the right idea.
Oh, you see yourself as a Hitler or Mussolini, do you?
Not me. A dictator has to have a mystic appeal, something that excites his followers, makes them ready to die for him. I couldn't do that. I could make people fear me. I could never make them love me. Have you heard of Zhirinsky?
Yes, I have, actually. The head of the Cheka.
Every dictator needs his Zhirinsky, and ultimately is ruled by him.
I see. Of course, you realize I'd be doing the country a service if I were to strangle you here and now.
What?
I could, you know.
You couldn't, Charlie. Your conscience wouldn't let you. You're too soft. You're too good.
I don't know about that.
I do. I don't want to see you again.
I'm off tomorrow anyway.
I mean ever.
Yes. Yes, I thought that's what you meant. I'm sorry. Oh, well, I hope I haven't been too bad a friend to you, Simon.
You're the only friend I ever had.
Oh, Simon. Why the hell do you have to make yourself so unhappy?
Damn you, Charlie! Oh, damn you!
You are an ass, Simon. You might have hurt me.
Get up. Go back to your bloody hall. Go on, go!
I wonder what will happen to Simon in the end.
If he were Russian, he'd end up in the Politburo. Or he'd have committed suicide.
But being English, he could just as well end up as editor of the Times.
I suppose he told you I was at the Sarai to earn enough to enable Robert to escape.
Well,
the people I had to meet this morning, they were two prisoners who'd recently been released. They had news of Robert.
Oh, how is he?
He seems to have fallen on his feet. He's working in the prison hospital.
Oh, well, that's something.
It's possible to send him a little money to buy cigarettes and extra food.
I see. Look, I hope you won't think...
No, Charlie, I don't want your money. I can send him what he needs, but not to help him escape. I don't want him to escape. He sinned and he must suffer.
But you don't need to. You've suffered enough.
Not yet. When the time comes, when I feel that Robert is free of his sin, then I shall leave the Sarai.
And then? What will you do?
I don't know.
But you will wait for him. 15 years.
Yes. If he still wants me.
You're not even sure of that.
How can I be? All I can be sure of is that I shall still love him. Do you know that never before have I been in a first-class carriage?
In England, I usually go third. But as my father says, when one's abroad, one ought to travel like a gentleman.
It makes the right kind of impression on the natives.
You have a peculiar gift for making me feel a fool.
Oh, no, Charlie, never that. Or only in the way saints are foolish.
It's odd, isn't it?
What?
For nearly 5 days, we've been pretty well inseparable, and yet we'll probably never see each other again.
That's true.
Say, the cry.
I know.
Just
like what?
Just like a child. No. What I was going to say was, just like the other night in your sleep.
In my sleep? Oh, did I wake you?
No. It was just tears. Anyway, I was already awake. In fact, I was... Well, I was... You know... I was tempted to climb into your bed.
But you didn't.
No.
Charlie. Goodbye, Charlie. There.
Mother!
Oh, darling.
Are you on your own?
I told your father that as he'd seen you off last Saturday, I was going to meet you today. Patsy wanted to come too, but I wouldn't let her.
How is everyone?
Oh, fine. And waiting for you at home.
And I've brought you all presents. A perfume for you too.
Lovely.
I smuggled them.
Good God, they'll stink like a brothel.
Leslie.
And I brought you a tie from Charvet, Dad.
Is it loud?
Yes.
Good.
Did you have any adventures, Charlie?
None at all.
Liar.
You must tell us all about everything at dinner. Go and dress, darling. He looks awfully pale, Leslie.
Bit washed out, yes, I noticed that.
It struck me the moment he got off the train.
Oh, he'll be all right in a day or two. Dare say he's been racketing about a bit. Helping one or two pretty ladies provide for their old age.
Darling.
Oh, come off it, Venetia. What do you suppose you went to Paris for?
To see Simon and some pictures. To go to the Comédie Française.
Yes.
He's only a boy.
He's 23 and a normal young man. You don't suppose he's still a virgin, do you?
Oh, I do think men are disgusting. Did you have lots of lovely food?
It was all right. I didn't go to any smart restaurants. We used to have our meals at little places in the Latin Quarter.
Who's we?
I dined with Simon.
It's true.
Thank you, darling.
I did. They probably don't believe me, though.
And did you see any pictures?
Yes. I went to the Louvre. I was rather taken with the Chardin.
Can't say he's ever appealed to me very much.
Your father's impossible. Chardin's a very fine painter, even though he's not great.
How was your Christmas at the Terry Mason?
Oh, lovely. Better than ever. Everyone missed you.
Patsy had a proposal of marriage.
Go on.
Thrilling, wasn't it? Still, as he was only 16, I didn't feel I ought to encourage him. So I gave him a chaste kiss on the brow and promised to be a sister to him. I mean, designing female that I am, I do draw the line at snatching babies from their cradles.
Oh, how grand it is to be back. To belong. So warm and companionable. So real. Light falling softly on a polished table. The way it catches the silver and the cut glass. I do love them. If anything were to take them away from me. 8:30. Gosh. Lydia will just be starting her night's work at the Serai, wearing those ridiculous Turkish trousers. her face and her nipples painted. While Simon, mortifying himself in that freezing apartment, plots and schemes. And out there, in the blazing heat, Berger, confident as ever, managing to look stylish, even in his prison uniform, will be thinking up some dangerous, harebrained plot, just for the hell of it.
And we've missed hearing you play, darling.
Sorry, Mother?
You shall play something for us while we have our coffee.
Yes, of course.
From the way you usually do.
Yes. Yes, I thought that.
Oh, nonsense.
The feeling was quite different.
Yes, a sort of tremor, quite effective.
I prefer the old way. You made it sound rather morbid.
You turning in now, old man?
Yes. It's been quite a day. Well, 5 days, actually.
Yes. Yes, I dare say you went the pace a bit over there, too. Still, that's no business of mine. Some things a father and son needn't go into. Mind you, though, accidents do happen. Well, what I was going to say was, if you should find there's anything the matter, don't you hesitate about seeing old Dr. Chinnery right away. He brought you into the world, and he's the soul of discretion.
Yes. Yes, of course.
Put you right in no time. His bill will be paid and no questions asked.
Thanks, Dad.
That's really all I wanted to say. So, good night, son.
Good night, Dad. Oh, God. He thinks I've picked up some filthy disease.
Chance would have been a fine thing.
What on earth am I saying? That, oh yes, that would have been all of a piece with this cozy, artificial, utterly remote existence that we live here. That I've lived for the past 23 years.
How can you tell what it's like to belong nowhere?
There she is, working at a place like the Savoy, just so that she can make enough money to pay for his escape and then join him in Brazil.
I love Robert with all my heart and soul. But he has sinned. Only by suffering as much as him can I help to expiate that sin. No, no, no! You played as if it was about a Sunday afternoon in London with people in their best clothes walking around and wondering if it's time for tea.
Have you heard of Zajinsky?
Not only a loaf of bread and a flagon of wine. It's the mystery of man's lot on earth. His craving for a little friendship and a little love. The humility of his resignation when he sees that even they must be denied him.
Just below the surface, there are strange, murky horrors. Poisonous snakes, fish with murderous jaws. All at war with each other, yet waiting for some unsuspecting innocent to venture within their reach.
Have you heard of Dzerzhinsky?
But I don't want rest and I don't want release. You're my enemy and I hate you.
Do you know what I believe? That God has been dead for millions of years.
Democracy is moonshine, of course.
Oh, how little you understand. You with your cold English nature.
Don't worry, Charlie. War is coming. And with it, upheaval for the rich and powerful, starvation for the poor, and power to the ones with the skill and foresight to take it.
How lucky you English are with no fear of the future, of your world being turned upside down.
No, but it has.
You're the only friend I ever had. Damn you, Charlie! Damn you!
It has. Completely. Completely upside down. Nothing can ever be the same again.
Peter Rumney was Charlie, Elizabeth Lindsay, Lydia, and Anthony Daniels, Simon, in Christmas Holiday. Venetia was played by Monica Gray, Leslie, Jeffrey Siegel, Patsy, Jenny Funnell, Robert, George Parsons, Madame Berger, Mary Wimbush, Mademoiselle Ernestine, Carol Boyd. The hotel manager, Richard Durden, and the detective, David Goodland. The novel by Somerset Maugham was dramatized for radio by Jeffrey Siegel and directed by Graham Gould.